New Zealand in 1870, when the first boatload of black-birded New Hebrideans arrived, was not a place where the central government had a great deal of control over its hinterlands. The area of New Zealand where numerous ships were being sent up to the islands to participate in the black-birding trade, either by moving islanders to the plantations in Fiji and Queensland or bring islanders back to New Zealand. This area was quite rugged, isolated bays, and people were able to operate outside of the surveillance of the government for some time. And I think there was also probably some ambiguity in the response of members of the government to the early stages of the blackbirding trade. New Zealand was a very racialized society. It was still emerging from some very bitter conflicts between Pākehā and Māori. There was all sorts of racially discriminatory legislation on the books, continuing to be put on the books. And even the opponents of the blackbirding trade tended to use extremely racist language. When the schooner Lulu arrived in Auckland in 1870 with a cargo of around 27 New Hebrideans, there was an outcry from the media, but this outcry was really premised on all sorts of racist attitudes. The New Zealand Herald, for instance, ran an editorial saying that the New Hebrideans were too degraded a people to be present in New Zealand, and their presence was offensive to Pākehā, or to white New Zealanders. And it was even offensive to Maori, because Maori were sort of higher on the racial ladder than New Hebrideans. And it went on to call them savage garbage gatherers. And people sort of described them as a people held captive by abominable fetishism. It was sort of commenting on the pre-Christian state of much of the New Hebrides at the time.
Is there much known about that attitude, the impact of that attitude on the people that were here as bonded labourers?
One of the frustrating things researching this is the absence of the voices of the New Hebrideans from the archives. And this is something that I'm very interested in trying to correct by getting in touch with the Ngāi Vanuatu community, both in New Zealand and in the homeland, because we get this a view through the colonial lens, and the extensive media coverage I've just talked about, but there's also a long police report on the state of the New Hebrideans, which has a lot of invaluable information, but it's compiled by a leading policeman, and it's devoid of the voices of the New Hebrideans themselves, and it doesn't even give us their names, their real names. It gives us their nicknames, these kind of absurdist nicknames that they've been given by their masters, names like Sunday and 1 o'clock, and various Nakuri, which is the Maori word for dog, so sometimes quite offensive names. And there's a sort of contrast here with another aspect of the blackbirding research I've been doing, which is I've been doing an investigation into the slave raids on Tonga in 1863, which were perpetrated by a group of Tasmanian and New Zealand whalers. And two Tongan islands were raided, and a significant segment of the population were taken away and sent to Peru. And these tragedies are remembered in the songs and the stories, the sort of stories that I was able to hear around kava bowls in Tonga. They're very much in historic memory. And it would be great to try and find some stories that were told in the voices of the Ngāi Vanuatu people.
There were some, though, that did stay in New Zealand, weren't there? I understand very few, but were the stories there passed down in those families?
Well, that's something I want to work on, but the thread is hard to trace. I did meet a wonderful man last week in Efate. He had a connection with a woman who was taken to Dunedin in the 1870s as a domestic servant. And she served a missionary there. And she'd been buried in a cemetery down in Dunedin. And he'd gone to the South Island as a migrant worker in the recognised seasonal employment scheme. And he'd actually travelled hundreds of kilometres from his place of employment, which is not actually that easy to do these days because the recognised seasonal employment scheme often puts limits on the ability of the migrant workers to travel. But he travelled to Dunedin to visit her grave because he had a family connection to her.
I know there's a strong link between people in Vanuatu and Australia, South Sea Islanders in Australia. Did he feel that kind of kinship?
Yes, absolutely. He did. He felt a strong kinship with her. And by all accounts, she went willingly to work as a domestic servant. So he didn't feel the sort of anger that many members of the South Sea Islanders community, you know, very understandably feel about the circumstances in which their ancestors were brought to Australia.
You've just been in Efate now with some documents to hand back to the country. Can you just tell us what that's all about?
Well, I visited the Vanuatu Cultural Centre, which has a proud history of archiving material related to Pacific history and in particular related to blackbirding. And I handed over some documents there and also had the privilege of meeting Ralph Reagan Vanu, who's the Minister of Lands and Energy in the Vanuatu government. And it was great talking to both of them and to people at the VCC and also to Ralph. And I really got a sense of the centrality of blackbirding to Ne Vanuatu identity and also its continuing relevance